You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. The sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. Welcome to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network on Saturday. Got off to a bumpy start there. Jeez. So I was all fired up for the show. I've been here early. I could barely get it out because I want to talk about Eric Thames, excited that he had yet another walk-off home run. Both Matt Modica and producer Chris Pavona were talking right before the show about how much they like Eric Thames, George. They kind of root for him. He's a fun player to watch. And last night, yet another walk-off home run for him.
Yeah, well, it was kind of a strange one, right? I mean, the left fielder and the center fielder were both at the wall. It's like they were almost debating or flipping a coin as to who would jump to try and rob the homer. And then I think it was the left fielder pretty much jumped into the wall rather than go over it. So it was, all right, I just found that humorous.
Yeah, a bunch of home runs in this contest yesterday, Matt. Travis Shaw hits his 12th home run. Pena hits a home run. Thames with his 19th of the season. You were saying it's just a guy you really like to root for.
Yeah, no, I really do. I love his nickname in career. They called him God. He's hit 5 home runs in the month of June. The batting average is like .215. The strikeouts are up. But I've been preaching this guy is someone to buy over the last month as he's had his slump, and hopefully this is the beginning of a really nice run for him.
Keon Broxton, struck out 3 more times, but does have a homer and 3 RBIs, Matt.
Yeah, but it's amazing how like competition brings the best out of people. They brought up Lewis Brinson, the highly acclaimed prospect. And he's the last couple of days, he's really turned it on. I think he had a two-run home run game the other day. And as a Broxton owner, I hope he keeps it up.
Yeah, George, Will Myers with a home run. Jervis Solarte with a home run. Renfro with his 15th of the year. A lot of solo shots in this game yesterday, but fun for fantasy owners because we had a bunch of bombs in this game.
Yeah, ball was jumping out in Milwaukee. That's good hitters ballpark there. Will Myers has had once another excellent season, fantasy and reality-wise for the Padres. Renfro, good to see that. The Padres need some good young players, man. This team's going to be living in last place for quite a while, so it's good to see the young guys start to hit. Solarte, though, I wonder if he'll be on the trade block in 6 weeks.
Yeah, very well could be. George, how do you see Will Myers like fitting into long-term plans? Do you think this is a guy that's here to stay? You think he could get some money out of the Padres, or is he going to be a guy that's on the move as they continue the rebuild?
I think that's a tough call because you could build around him, but he's not a kid anymore. We still think he is, but he's really not. So I think if the right offer came along, I think they would move him. The question is, would the right offer come along? They're going to need a pretty good haul here. I don't see it happening this year at the deadline. Not too many teams are dying for an outfielder. It's more like a pitching and relief pitching that's going to pay the price this year. So I think he stays this year, but eventually if I had to guess, Mike, I'd probably vote for that he'll be on the move at some point.
Yeah. Buyers and sellers are starting to become a little bit more clear here, Matt. And San Diego doesn't have tons to give, but whatever they can give, they might as well continue the rebuild with players like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that and more. Lots to talk about. Ian Kennedy, nice start last night. Talk a little bit about our Albert Pujols when we got back. And viewer question, listener question after this. Mike, Matt, George back with the Roto Experts in the Morning. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike Blewett along with George Kurtz and Matt Modica this morning. We're here until 10 a.m. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. Matt is at CTM Baseball. And you can hit us up with a phone call if you like at 84-FNTSY. So we'll be taking calls on baseball, on football. You want to talk about the U.S. Open? I can give you a minute on that, even though it's not what we're here to do. But Tony Sakata is probably loaded on fantasy golf this morning, despite the fact that he's got fantasy bagels and baseball coming up here. I'll probably give you a few minutes on golf. As we do, we have a lot of DFS advice on golf on this channel. A few big names are out of that tournament, but, you know, we still got Ricky Ricky Fowler in there in the mix. I'll be excited to settle in on Father's Day tomorrow and watch a little bit of that. So last night, watching, flipping back and forth between Yankees, A's, and it was Royals, Angels. And George, I was saying this to Matt before the show. Ian Kennedy is, he works at a million miles an hour, or he was last night, like super quick paced, just not taking his time. He's up there, he's ready to throw. And he had actually a no hitter through five, maybe five and two thirds, actually. And of all people, Cliff Pennington steps up and hits his first extra base hit of the year, and it's a home run. So he breaks up the no hitter, the perfect game, the shutout, all in one shot. I think it was, he had retired 17 straight up to that point. So as Matt said, that's baseball.
That is baseball. It's always I always find that humorous. You got a pitcher, you got a great game, you got the no hitter, perfect game, go, you lose it all in one swing, one bad pitch, and there it goes. It's the Angels. That without Mike Trout, even with Mike Trout, they're far from the greatest offensive team. It's a team that's going to rely on speed now. Cameron Maybin or Eric Young getting on base, running, causing, wreaking havoc there. Pujols was nowhere near the same batter he was. Calhoun's been hot. He's someone to watch out for right now. If someone gave up on him, you should go out and grab him off your waiver wire. But once again, we're not talking about an all-star player here. This team's going to struggle scoring runs.
Yeah, they only managed three hits and the one walk last night. So Kenny got into a little bit of trouble after that homer, but he gets out of it and he gets his first win of the season. He's 1-6 on the year. But you, George, you made a perfect segue there, because what Matt and I talked about in the first inning, I'm watching Kennedy. He's hitting gun at like 92. He leaves a fastball up over the middle of the plate to Pujols, and Pujols swung at it, hit it really hard, and it settled nicely into the left fielder's glove. And I remember thinking, gosh, a few years ago, that would have been in the waterfalls in Kansas City. So, Matt, you and I talked a bit about that.
Yeah, and it is a shame. Like, you watch Pujols, the guy can't run. He can barely walk. And, he was one of the most dominant hitters that I've seen, at least since the start of the century and stuff. What he did in St. Louis, and even what he continued to do. I mean, I know everybody dogs him for Los Angeles, but he pretty much hits 30 home runs every year. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals were very wise not to match that offer. And getting back to Kennedy, he needed that start last night. I mean, he's had like six starts in a row where he's given up four or five runs at least. And the Royals are going to look to move him. But another guy in this game who needs to get a lot of credit and could get the Royals a really nice return is Lorenzo Cain. Mm-hmm. What he's doing this season, I mean, he's pretty much matching last year's totals. And he had 434 plate appearances last year and 274 plate appearances. He's pretty much matched that. And he's
homers last night, by the way.
Yeah, and he's a guy that can really help somebody. He's going to be a free agent. He's not in the Royals' plans long term. So that'll be interesting to see who wins the low Cain sweepstakes.
3-for-4, 2 runs scored, 3 RBIs last night for Cain. George, you and I have talked a bunch about the Royals and when is it that they're going to start moving everybody. And the two guys that seem like pretty good chips in Cain and Hosmer have been really good. Hosmer was off to a terrible start this season, and he's completely turned it around. And Lorenzo Cain, here he is. He's becoming an asset right before, a bigger asset right before our eyes.
But are the Royals trading out now? I mean, look at it. They're only 3 games out of first place, and that division is a vein of mediocrity. Yeah. They've won 6 straight, 3 games out of first, 32-34, so they're within 2 games within 500. Team that went to the World Series a couple of years ago, won the World Series a couple of years ago. So maybe now they're not going to have a fire sale. I think that's the wrong thing to do. I think if you know you can't re-sign these guys in the offseason, you move them now for whatever you can get for them. Hosmer, Lorenzo Cain, if he wants to go, if you believe you're not going to have him. Herrera, the closer. You'll get back a lot of prospects, and the Royals generally have to be a team that does this. They can't hold on to these guys. They know they can't sign them. So, you make sure, are they going to be one of these teams that goes, you know what, let's give it one more shot. Let's go for it one more time. They believe this mirage. I think it'll be curious to see what they do. This whole division's really kind of weak. The Chicago White Sox, we know we're a bad team, are only 5 games out of first place.
Yeah, and Matt, you really have to have a lot of roster integrity as an organization and try to evaluate, is this a team that really can win it? With the Indians getting Kluber back, are they ready for a run here and to pull away from people in the second half of the season. They haven't shown that at all yet.
Cleveland has not. I think they will. And I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland pulls a deal off or something like that, because they got some problems here. I mean, Carrasco is a really good pitcher. They have to be concerned. Can he hold up? You know, the whole story with Salazar, he's on the DL right now. So they need another arm. And in my opinion, as crazy as that would sound entering the season. But I think it's Cleveland's to lose. They're one game behind Minnesota. Minnesota's played really well. Detroit's the team I thought would be much better this year, but unfortunately. But at least the Royals have the next month. They could, you know, after the All-Star break, they can really gauge.
They don't have to panic right now.
Yeah. And they're only, like George said, three back now. That could change over the next month. They could be like,
as George said, you know, I don't know how heated the outfielder market is going to be, but these things change, right? Especially considering the amount of injuries that have occurred this season. So, George, on to the other game that I was watching last night. As my friend likes to call him, Mutant Jeet Rod, Aaron Judge, is hitting everything out, no matter where the ball is pitched. He hits a laser to opposite field last night, and then the triple, if it hit the wall on a fly, could have gone through the wall. So he has a home run and a triple last night. Three more RBIs along to go along with the homer and the triple.
Yeah, Aaron Judge is pretty incredible. I mean, you're talking about a guy who right now is just he could transcend the sport. The guy is 6'8", 280, 6'7", 280. I mean, you watch him at home when he's next to somebody, another big guy. Like, he's on first base like the Chris Davis when Walter was in town last week, and he towers over Chris Davis. Next to Matt Holliday, towers over Holliday.
Holliday's huge.
Chris Davis are big men.
Yes, Holliday is massive. I was saying it to Matt before the show. Like, he's got this, he never wears sleeves underneath the jersey. Like, Matt Holliday's jacked. He's like 6'3", 235.
And he looks like a little kid next to Judge. I mean, it's just amazing how big this guy. You generally don't see guys this big be successful at baseball. We've said it over and over again. He's made adjustments at every level of pro bowl. He struggled at every level. And then he makes that adjustment, and it succeeds. Right now, if he gets a hold of a ball, it's 500. That ball was 500 feet, way over 500 feet last week at Yankee Stadium. That was no way. That was 495, 496, whatever they call it. And if he just mishits it, he'll get it out of the park. But if he crushes it, it's out of everything. Last night in Oakland, you know, the Yankees pretty much put up a spring training lineup last night. And I said before the game, Oakland had to do is not pitch the Judge. Don't let him beat you. I'd welcome him every time he came out to the bat. Instead, they pitched to him, and Judge almost won that game by himself.
Yeah, so Manaea got touched up, obviously, by Judge. Conversely, Luis Severino struggled early, but he settled in. It was kind of sort of a nice outing to see from him when he faced a little bit of adversity, giving up four in the second inning. But he battled through 106 pitches, struck out the last guy that he faced, and he was in position to win the game. But for first time in a while, Yankees have some bullpen issues.
Yeah, Severino... He's been a great story all year, and he's pitched exceptionally well. I thought last night would be a real pitcher's matchup, a duel we'd see. Manaea's been great since coming off the DL as well, and, you know, he gave up five. But, I mean, both of these two young guys are very fun to watch, and guys I really like. I bought in on Severino. I was not a believer before the season. I truly believe now. Manaea, I was a believer, and I'm even more cemented in that.
Yeah,
belief.
Got it. So on this game, George got a question, a listener question regarding a trade. He just got offered Jose Peraza and Derek Fisher for his Starlin Castro. So he does need steals. What do you think of that trade, Matt?
If I know Fisher's going to be up, I can pull the trigger on that. Peraza's had a horrible month of June. I think he's had one stolen base attempt, and he's been picked off. The average is like 200. I think he has two homers, which is not what you want Jose Peraza for. But, I mean, if I'm going to give up Starlin Castro, I need to know that, you know, I'm going to have somebody that's going to be playing every day. And I don't know the long-term look on Peraza. And I love Derek Fisher. If Derek Fisher is going to play every day, then I'd do it. But I'm a little concerned.
George, I mean, Starlin Castro is hitting .330 right now. I suppose you could say, well, I've gotten the best out of Starlin Castro. He's not going to hit anywhere near that for the rest of the year. But it's a lot to give up.
Yeah, Matt already said it. I said I wouldn't do the deal for the reason Matt said. Just don't know about Fisher. He could be back down next week. And Peraza's not good enough for Castro. Castro's been fantastic for the Yankees, and I don't see that stopping.
Yeah, I think you keep riding out Starlin Castro. You get a better deal than that, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mike, Matt, and George will be back after this to talk around MLB Around the Horn on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. For summer, but school's in on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're dominating the waiver wires in baseball. We're doing our best to keep you updated on the world of baseball. But in addition to that, the Fantasy Football Exclusive Edge package is out, and you can enter code DAD for a special discount of 25% this weekend. So George has contributed to that. I've contributed to that. Tons of articles in there on strategies, on sleepers, on coaching changes. I'm doing offensive lines, which, by the way, there's big news. We're going to talk football in the second hour. There's big news on that front with the Rams trading Greg Robinson over to the Lions to replace the Taylor Decker injury. And then just yesterday, we learned that Saints left tackle Teron Armstead basically suffered a similar injury to Taylor Decker, and he missed 7 games last year, Armstead did, and now he's going to miss another 4 to 5 months likely with this. So the Saints are in trouble at the left tackle position again. So we'll talk about that more in the next hour. But figured I'd update you there. So one thing I did want to update George, and Matt and I were talking during the break, you and he always preach patience, and you know, you just got to stay in there. It's too early to bail on the fantasy baseball team, and I was down by a few dozen points just a couple of weeks ago. I think the top guy in the league in this 5x5 had about 88 points. He was kind of running away with the league, and I was down in the lower 50s and down in the dumps. And here we are a couple of weeks later, and the gap is closed. It's 14 points right now. I'm in fourth place, mainly because my hitting has just been on fire. Judge and Kane and Hosmer and a few other guys. But, you know, you just got to preach to people to stay in there. You've been joking with me, George, about football season is only 12 weeks away or all that kind of stuff. But I'm actually kind of back in the mix now.
And how nice for you.
Yeah.
Yes, patience is always something you need to preach. I mean, people get people freak out in April. My God, it's 2 weeks into the season. If someone's not hitting, all of a sudden you want to get rid of them. I mean, in April it comes down to, listen, would you release the person in July if they had a 2-week slump? Probably not. So what makes April any different? But, you know, we're in mid to late June here now. And decisions need to be made. If a guy's been struggling all season now, it could be time to move on. I think that's pretty much the lead into my Who's Hot, Who's Not column last night. It was exactly that. Decisions need to be made now. You can't fall too far behind in categories or that far behind in the standings. You need to look at things now, find out what you need help in, what you don't need. You may have categories where you may be winning home runs by 30. All right, you win home runs by 30 or by 2. Same amount of points there. So even if you have too much power, you can look to deal that for a category you're not doing so well in. I think, once again, decisions need to be made now about, you know, it's maybe more than just a small sample size.
Yeah, I'm going to make a very abrupt transition right here. Kevin Gausman stinks. Carlos Martinez is really good. Kevin Gausman stinks.
Key analysis there.
Yeah. He just can't get it going at all. 6.6 ERA now. The ERA ballooning to a point where what does Showalter do?
Yeah, I've asked this question to Joe last night in the Black Book. I mean, like, what do the Orioles do with Kevin Gausman right now? I mean, I don't think they can really send him back down. I mean, maybe for a week or two just to try and get some confidence or work something out, but I don't really know if that's the answer. It's really mind-blowing. I mean, I thought this kid would be much better. I thought we saw signs of taking that next step last season in the final 2 months. He's making Ubaldo look like a really good pitcher right now.
Yeah. George, on the flip side, Carlos Martinez, another nice outing. 6 innings pitched, only the 1 earned run and 8 strikeouts. He gets the win.
You know, he had that little blip on the radar, I don't know if it was at the end of April, early May, where he struggled with his command, right? He couldn't get the ball over the plate, got hit a little bit. Other than that, this guy's been dynamic. He's their best pitcher. He's the Cardinals' best pitcher. It's really not even all that close. He's dynamite. He's small in stature, so you worry about him over a long season. You know, can he put up consistently over 200 innings? I wonder if that could be an issue here. But the kid's dynamite. Throws upper 90s, can throw hard. When he has his location down, he's another guy who's fun to watch.
On that front, let's go ahead. You were going to say something, man?
No.
Cards hit a ton of homers yesterday. DeJong homer, Carpenter homer, Fowler homer, Pham homer, Jerko homer. Jerko is like the one guy that back in April, I'm still gnashing my teeth over not picking him up. I just had a good feeling about it. I didn't take advantage, and here he is hitting in the middle of the Cards lineup, 294. Yet another homer for Jed Jerker, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, he just has so many different positions he can play. And there's been constant injuries in that infield. Colton Wong, who's actually played well when healthy, can't stay healthy this season. So Jerko's going to play. They're going to find ways to get him in there. And as we saw last year, he really turned it on like that second half. So, you know, maybe the best still yet to come from Jerko. I mean, he is batting 294. I don't know about that being sustainable, but we all know the power is real. And just a quick note, Matt Carpenter, who's batting like 220 all season, is now up to 250, has 13 home runs, and Dexter Fowler is a key piece to this team, and he's been turning it on lately.
Yeah, maybe that's the sign. You know, look, people have been scratching their heads about the Cardinals for a while, but they start to heat up. You know, if they can get into the All-Star break back at 500, maybe they make that run that you need, right?
Yeah, real quick, the one guy I would definitely be looking, if I could maybe stash him, is I think at some point soon we're going to see Luke Weaver, their top pitching prospect. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing this kid pitch. He's somebody I've drafted in like those deep drafting holds in the preseason, and I think his time will be coming sooner than later.
Got it. George, on the Orioles side of things, Manny Machado took another over, 212. That's my team's improving, and it's no thanks to Manny Machado. He's killing me, but killing everybody that owns Manny Machado. On the flip side of things, Trey Mancini, 2-for-4 last night, another home run, George.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to the Orioles and Machado, I mean, I'm still acquiring him. If someone wants to sell him cheap, I'm acquiring him. But I'm also starting to think back in my head, man, this is starting to look like a lost season for Manny Machado. I don't know what the problem is. Is there an injury that we don't know about that's screwing up his swing? Is he just got something going on where he's not mentally involved here? Is it just a bad year? We do see it. But it's just unusual for Manny. An MVP type season last year, so just fall off the cliff this year, and we know he's better than this. I mean, he plays in a great ballpark for hitting. You know, good lineup around him. What's the problem here? I think Orioles trying to figure this out too. So I don't think nobody knows the problem. The overall problem with the team is the pitching is just terrible. Yeah. I mean, outside of Dylan Bundy, everybody else can go. I mean, they're just bad, and I don't feel bad for Baltimore. We've known about this for years that the pitching's been substandard. They make good money, and the Angels just refuse to go out and spend on pitching.
Yeah.
You want to win. You want to try and win a whole lot of 10-8 games. Good luck to you.
To George's credit, he's not the only one, but he's banging that drum since March. The Orioles are not going to be in the mix because they don't have enough pitching. But what's crazy is Trey Mancini has 75 less at-bats, basically, than Machado. He's got 6 more RBIs. He's got 1 less homer. He's hitting 93 points higher than him.
Yeah, the first thing with the Trey Mancini is it took this Chris Davis injury to finally, he was starting to get some regular playing time. But this is a guy, why not play him every day until he cools off? He's been hitting home runs. The Manny Machado thing, I still got to buy on him. I know it's the middle of June, but there's still 3.5 months left. This guy's still hitting the ball with a 48% hard hit rate. The fly ball percentage is 45%. I know the BABIP is like 200. He's batting 212. He's just better than this, and I would take the shot every time on him. You just have to.
I would too, because at this stage, look, a lot of good players can be really streaky. We see some tons of players. Robbie Cano comes to mind as a guy that can like just turn it on in 1 month, hit 425 for a month, and he carries your whole team. So I've suffered through the worst parts of Machado. Why would I give him up now when I know he can have a month like that? Assuming, now, first of all, we don't know about the injury thing. George is right. Maybe it's a Bryce Harper situation, and he's concealing an injury, but just toughing it out there every day. But why would I take the chance of getting rid of him unless I got, you know, a huge offer? I was offered for Machado, and it was a ridiculous offer, a bunch of pieces.
Yeah, one of those quantity over quality. Yeah. Like, I'll give you these four guys.
You're like a closer that's about to lose his job because I needed saves and a guy with stolen bases and some, you know, look, kudos to Jed Jerko, but like he's not going to be a major piece in my Manny Machado trade. You know what I mean? In any event, so that's it. You know, you got to keep an eye on Machado. I'm with these guys. I'm buying every time just because it can't get any worse.
Yeah, and just real quick on the Orioles, like just to repeat George's point about the pitching. Look at the guys they've gone after in free agency in the last few years. It was Ubaldo they gave $50 million to. Giovanni Gallardo they went and signed, and they were smart enough to at least trade him.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a shame. So I don't know how they've done it before. I don't see them doing it again.
Yeah. So one thing I saw during the previous break that I wanted to bring up. So he made his debut the other night. There was Derek Fisher, a guy we talked about in the trade earlier, which we wouldn't do. He hit a home run, and his first ever major league hit was a home run. He also got up later that inning because they had a big rally, and he got another hit with a single and an RBI and a run. So he got two hits in one inning in his major league debut. He was the first guy to do that since April 7th, 2004. Did you guys hear who the last player was to do that?
I did not.
George?
Negative.
Adam LaRoche. So, you know, hopefully there's better things ahead for Derek Fisher than Adam LaRoche's career, but, you know, he's a longtime major leaguer, so.
And my advice, Derek Fisher, is keep your son away from the locker room.
Yeah, there you go.
That was Adam LaRoche.
That's right, Adam LaRoche. So, anyway, we're going to talk closer report later this hour. We got to go over some injuries. It's not that much fun, but we got to do it. We got to let you guys know who landed on the DL. So we'll be back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network in a couple of minutes. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning with Mike, Matt, and George. Love me some foo. That's the way to get a Saturday started. So I know it's not everybody's favorite part of the show, but we got to go through some injuries. We got to see what's up, who's coming back, and when. Cole Hamels threw 35 pitches in three innings, so he's making his way back. That was his first rehab start. Next time out, looks like. I mean, it's one of these situations where they're not putting a pin in it as to when he's coming back.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the Rangers season, it's not gone as they had hoped. I mean, Houston is the dominant team in baseball right now. They look like the 2017 version of the Cubs. It's good. The Rangers are another team that it's going to be interesting over these next month to 6 weeks to see what they do. If, you know, they believe they have no shot at the wild card at some point, do they trade, you know, Darvish, Hamels? Because they're another team, you know, they're kind of like the Orioles West, not to that extent, though. Because after Darvish and Hamels, that pitching staff is not too good.
Yeah. George, I think we'd take a minute to spend with the Yankees multiple injuries that have occurred. But first, get an idea. Chapman had an erratic outing for Trenton last night, apparently, but he feels he's ready to come back to join the Yankees in Oakland or join the Yankees very shortly. So, Aroldis Chapman, what do you think the status is there?
Well, somebody better join the Yankees bullpen.
Yeah, no
I mean,
kidding.
It's been a train wreck the last three, 4 games. I know I tweeted out last night the bullpen had given up 9 runs in his last 16 innings, and that was before the meltdown last night. So there's some issues there. Adam Warren's on the DL. Tyler Clipper can't get anybody out. All the other young players that they keep rotating in and out are struggling badly. So Chase and Shreve, they're having issues all over the place here. Betances hasn't given up a run, but he also blew a save the other night by allowing an inherited runner to score. So there's issues all over the place. They certainly need Chapman to come back to make that solid solidify the ninth inning and the eighth inning. That would certainly help. Chapman will be back. If he's not back on Sunday, that's the earliest they would allow him to come back, because once again, he pitched through 20 pitches last night, so they're not going to have him come back today. They could activate him tomorrow, but I believe they're off Monday after the West Coast trip, which means they play again on Tuesday. I have a feeling they'll give him Sunday off and let him come back Tuesday, give him 3 more days off, and he'll be back with the Yankees on Tuesday. And on Tuesday, I activate to my fantasy team. I don't care what he struggles, how badly he struggles in the minors. If he's still closing for the Yankees, he's closing for me.
Yeah, obviously the Yankees are dealing with Sanchez and Hicks, and Adam Warren is on the 10-day DL, Matt. So the injury bug, they've been relatively clear of it, but add Sabathia to that mix, and it's been a whole bunch of guys this week for the Yankees are going to lose here for either a few days or longer.
Yeah, no, and as we talked about during the break, they're still 11 games over for 500, lost 4 in a row. George, do you see like Chance Adams coming up anytime soon with the Sabathia injury?
It doesn't look like they want to go in that direction, mainly because he's not on the 40-man roster, so they would have to send somebody away. I think right now we need to find out, the Yankees need to figure out how long Sabathia will be out for. Is it a couple of weeks, a couple of months? If it's a couple of weeks, no. I don't think they'll call up Chance Adams. They seem to be reluctant to do that for whatever reason. As much as they've been promoting their hitters quicker, it's like the pitchers they want to take their time with. So maybe Chance Adams doesn't get called up unless the injury is severe. It looks like Luis Sessa is going to get another shot at the start this weekend. I think Sessa's probably going to start today. Yankees were to be announced today and tomorrow, because once again, they're catering to Tanaka and they want to give him as much rest as possible. So I believe since they didn't use Sessa last night, they will push Tanaka back a day and use Sessa today, Tanaka tomorrow. I think they should call up Chance Adams, but unless that injury to Sabathia is longer than we think, I don't think they will, not for this injury anyway.
So, Matt, we were talking about the Mariners before the show. Paxton got beat up a little bit last night, but they are looking at potentially adding a couple of arms coming back from injuries as Felix Hernandez and his Sashi Iwakuma are wrapping up rehab assignments with AAA Tacoma.
And the Mariners are only 2.5 games back in the wild card. And we spoke... The Mets have been ravaged by injuries, okay. But so have the Mariners. The whole rotation was pretty much on the DL. Segura, who probably be back Tuesday, I believe. At least that's what it sounds like. They'll get him back. They just got Haniger back. This was a team I liked in the preseason. So it's going to be interesting to see what they can do. Looking at the American League wild card race, Boston and Cleveland are right now atop it. But I think Seattle is one of the better teams in that whole mix, where it's about 7-8 teams that are 2 to 2.5 games out. And, if they can get healthy, the thing is, hopefully with Paxton, it's just some mechanics and not a further thing with the forearm strain that he was.
Yeah, well, I hope he's not pitching through an injury. But, George, you were kind of high on the Mariners. They're going to be getting some guys back here. So maybe it, gets them a little push here as we head towards the All-Star break with them getting some arms back.
Yeah, and we all know, as when I predict teams that are mainstream teams that do well, that generally doesn't go out well, all that well for me either. So maybe on the kiss of doom for the Mariners. But yes, I did think they'd be a better team than what they played like. And Matt said it. There are a lot of the pitching. When I think of the injuries, I think of the starting rotation. I mean, they got decimated real quick. And we are hoping, even though I own no shares of Paxton, we are hoping that his injury is not. If there is an injury, it's not severe. He is just pitching through maybe a dead arm period, whatever it might be. But he did get shelled last night. But I'm not surprised he did. He was in my Who's Hot portion of the column.
Oh, nice. Dallas Keuchel went on the 10-day DL on June 5th with neck discomfort. He could begin playing catch in the next day or two, he said. Keuchel said he's feeling good. Noted that being able to throw a baseball soon to test his injury is, quote, exciting news. For a guy that went on there with neck discomfort, we're 12 days out from that. Now he's ready to start throwing a baseball, and he's excited. that I'm actually bummed about that update, and he's excited about it.
Yeah, I was a little concerned that first neck injury that he suffered. I was thinking maybe they were covering up a shoulder thing. And, you know, now that he's there, we kind of figured it was going to be at least a month. And, you know, at this point, say if he's just throwing a ball, he's going to have to build his arm up. I mean, we might not see him back till after the All-Star break.
Yeah. God, I almost hesitate to give you Mets injury updates, but I think a lot of people know that Juan Lagares is broken thumb or broken fractured IP joint in his left thumb. Same thumb that he tore a ligament in last year. That's going to be a long-term injury. Matt Harvey worried about his right arm. Stress injury to the scapula bone in his right shoulder. George, the Mets expect him to, quote, miss several weeks. It seems like longer than that.
Well, I mean, listen, you weren't starting Lagares anyway, so that's, as far as fantasy is concerned, unless you're in 15, 16 team league, that's no big deal.
Yep.
Matt Harvey, once again, isn't that addition by subtraction? Now you're forced to take him off your roster. You can't start him. That might actually be good for you. Maybe you're one of these guys, and I'm sort of like that too. The big name, you just can't take him out. And now, hey, you're forced to. I would think whoever you're going to put in there really is not going to do much worse than Harvey. So I don't know if I'm crying about that injury as well. I think as a baseball fan, I truly hope Harvey, you know, I think this is all medical, all injuries with him, health. I truly hope he gets healthy at one time in his career. He can be that pitcher again. But I just don't know. The injuries have been too severe between, you know, Tommy John, thoracic outlet, other wear and tear on the shoulder and elbow. I just wonder if he's ever, ever going to come anywhere near being that must-see TV, which I thought he was. It's a shame for the Mets. This has been a season of injuries for them. They haven't handled them well. And as just about every Met fan will complain about, I have no idea, other than being cheap, being frugal, why they won't call up Ahmad Rosario.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the Mets season right now. They're further out of the wild card than the division, and they're out, they're 10 to double digits out in the division. They're 11 out in the wild card. And the most annoying thing about Harvey, and I totally agree with George, I don't think we're ever going to see that guy again, is at least if he could have pitched well and been healthy, we could have possibly gotten something for him.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I got to think the season's over. The season's done for him. I don't see him coming back, coming off of a shoulder injury, having another shoulder problem.
I don't understand why they would even push him to come back.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the only thing the Mets can help going forward, Harvey, is they could start him again next season, and then maybe after a few months, if he's pitching well, they can flip him for something.
So much for his payday. You know who's the one guy I think of a little bit with Harvey? Because people are like, man, I haven't really seen this before. The guy I think of with him that was a rising star and it all just came crashing down due to injuries is Mark Pryor.
Yeah,
because people tend to forget how elite he was at the one point when he was at the top of his game, and you know they were on the verge of making the World Series, and you know he was part of that foul ball. It's this whole Steve Bartman nonsense. You know, Mark Pryor was out there; he was on the mound when that was going on, and I think people tend to forget how good he was. So, unfortunately, Matt Harvey has a lot of parallels to that Mark Pryor situation for me. So, again, I hope he can make it back. It's good for baseball, as George said. So, AJ Pollock might be coming back. It's a big update, right?
I hope.
We'll see. Might be in a uniform in the next couple of days. It's Mike, Matt, and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We'll be back after this. You know who's as cold as ice? It's Max Scherzer, Matt Modica. You like that?
They should name the stadium after him.
That's a good move. That's a good one. I like that one. Georgie rolled last night. 8 innings, 10 strikeouts. Is he swearing to himself on the mound again last night?
I kind of like that kind of stuff.
Me too.
I remember as a kid, I really didn't get to see much. I was a little too young, but always followed up on him. Mark Friedrich.
Friedrich, the bird.
Bird.
Yeah. Used to talk about that. MLB did a great little documentary on him, a little show on him.
The late Mark Friedrich.
Yes. Yeah. And he was always a colorful character.
He was.
And stuff. And
Al Hrabowski.
He was also crazy.
Yeah.
I enjoy, like, you know, getting angry, pumping himself himself up. I mean, he does love that mound at Citi Field.
Yeah.
I mean, 17 strikeouts, no hitter. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, George, Steven Matz actually pitched pretty well last night, but he was going up against a juggernaut last night in Max Scherzer. But Matt's been pretty good since he's back.
Well, listen, the question with Matt's always been the same thing. Stay healthy. When he's on the mound and pitching, he's fine. It's when he, how long can he go?
It really is crazy. George is right. George, you say this all the time. You're right. Like, he really does deliver when he's out there.
The problem is, he's been hurt at every level. That's the thing. It's like, you know, it's great, like George says, when you're out there and you perform. But like the Mets of all teams are like the one that need that guy to be there. Yeah. That was the one good thing about like Bartolo Colon these last few seasons. He was always there every fifth day and reliable. He outperformed.
Yeah, it's fair to say the Mets don't have a lot of reliable players. But George, back to you for a sec, because I cut you off with the Mets thing. I mean, for our purposes, you just ride it out as long as you can, right?
That's what I would do. I don't. Can you rely on him for the rest of the season? Probably not. Matt said it, and I 100% agree. I mean, the numbers are the numbers. He gets hurt at every level, sometimes multiple times. It's one of these things with Matt's that I'm starting to wonder. The human body's not meant to throw over him. Say it over and over again. And his body may be more fragile than most, but he just may never be able to throw 200 innings or 180 or 150. You know, so that's going to be a problem over and over again. But when he's on the mound, he provides you solid numbers. Now, last night wasn't great, but it's also against the best team in the National League. So, you take the good and the bad there. So, listen, I like Mets. I have him in one league or two, but I'm fully aware that relying on him to make another, 18 starts is probably fool's gold, probably not going to happen. So, it is what it is.
You know who's also not afraid of Citi Field? Bryce Harper.
Yeah, Bryce Harper is
3-for-5. 3-for-5. Ribby and a run scored. Anthony Rendon, 2-for-4, 3 RBIs. So I'm not trying to pile on the Mets, but, that's kind of right in their face last night.
Well, the one good thing was Daniel Murphy only had one hit last night versus the Mets. He's owned them since going over to the Nationals. Anthony Rendon this year versus the Mets, I think he's got like half his stats, half his offensive output has come against the Mets. So, I mean, it's just not a good
thing. I was listening to local sports radio here in New York yesterday, and the person was relaying the story about how Omar Minaya, it was Mike Francesa actually, is Omar Minaya told him many times that he thought Daniel Murphy would win a batting title one day. And it's just interesting to hear that because Murphy's made those adjustments. And
yeah, a lot of credit's got to go to Kevin Long.
Yeah.
He really helped him in that process. And now Murphy's a true believer in the launch angles and all that good stuff.
George, you want to say anything else bad about the Mets to end Matt's hour on a sour note?
I don't think I have to say anything compared to the Mets and Mets. Mets how in a sour note. I mean, listen, they're a team. I think Matt actually said it earlier. I think it's time to pull up the tent here, pull up stakes, and sell what you can that you don't need long term. You know, I have a friend of mine who keeps swearing at the Mets, and I know this is not never going to happen. It's how fans think, though. The Mets should sell Reed, Bruce, and Blevins to Washington for Victor Robles. Not going to happen, but I think I like the thought of where he's going with that.
It's a lot. It's a lot of moving. DJ LeMahieu had 8 hits. We're going to talk football in the second hour. DJ LeMahieu had 8 hits in the last 2 days, raised his average 20 points, so good for him. Mike, Matt, and George, hour number 2 on the Roto Experts in the morning.
Roto Experts in the morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
It's not just Mike and George. It's Matt Modica, too. Got a nice little trifecta of experts here this morning on the Roto Experts. And by the way, if you don't have the app, you need to download it. If you're listening on your laptop right now or by a mobile website or something like that, you need to download the app. Take the world's premier 24/7 fantasy sports radio network with you wherever you go. Download the FNTSY Sports Radio app now in the iTunes Store on Google Play. Now and listen for free anytime, anywhere. So you can hear Tony Cicada on the treadmill. You can hear Matt Modica when you're getting some coffee. You can hear George when you're eating lunch or whatever you're doing at the time. So please download the app for us. Get the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store on Google Play and take the experts with you. So Some schedule changes coming up in a couple of weeks, but it's us three here for the next couple of Saturdays. I can tell you all the NFL content and the exclusive Edge package is available now. Enter promo code DAD for a 25% discount this weekend for all you fathers out there. So happy Father's Day to you, and a day in advance. We'll do a big Father's Day celebration tomorrow, maybe. But in any event, I did want to talk a little bit more at length about the Teron Armstead injury, because we don't talk tons about offensive lines. I happen to be the offensive line guy for us. It just sort of happened a few years ago. I keep writing this article, and I write like 3,500 words on the offensive lines. And it is amazing to me, and I'll talk about it at length another day, how much it impacts the offenses, right? But now the Saints lose their left tackle. It's a week after the Lions lose their left tackle. The Lions made the move to get maybe the only guy out there on the market that you could grab some potential from. So now the Saints are going to lose their left tackle. It was a top. I had them in the top 12. They're not going to be there now because they're going to be moving some players around. Unfortunately, what happens is guys just end up playing out of position. So how do you think it can impact them, Matt?
Well, I mean, that left side's going to be weak. That's a major blow. It looked like they really were putting together a nice offensive line here. Their offensive linemen have really good grades outside of Pete. Everybody was above 80. And, you know, the left side took a big blow. I don't know what the solution is with, you know, trade. I don't really see that happening. Maybe somebody gets cut and they're going to have to, you know.
It's like the hard. I mean, yeah. It's the hardest thing to replace.
Exactly.
I mean, even look at the Vikings. They were able to go out and get Sam Bradford, right? Quarterbacks are a premium, but they're able to go out and get somebody. They paid a lot for it, but they're able to get somebody. Nobody that's got a left tackle that's worth their salt is going to trade him. Mm-hmm. The only thing you could do is maybe get a one-year deal, George, for a guy at the end of his career for a team that's already drafted somebody. Like the Broncos just drafted Bowles. Can they start that rookie and give up Donald Stevenson? I don't know, but I just think the Saints are in a world of hurt here with this injury. No pun intended.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to replace. You're not going to be able to replace Teron Armstead. Already left tackle. You already said the reasons why. You're not going to be out acquiring one.
Yeah.
You can forget about that. That's not happening. Maybe it's the curse of AP. Wherever he goes, the offensive line suffers.
That's actually a great point.
And okay. They actually built up the line. You know, they were doing a nice job.
I know. They're trying to do the right thing. I like that, George. We can promote that. That'll be our new thing. Curse of Adrian Peterson. All right, it's Mike, Matt, and George. We'll be back to talk about the Saints more after the break. Back on the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's Mike, George, and Matt. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio, or give us a call, 844-843-6879. It's 84-FNTSY. So we talked a little bit about the Saints. I feel like everybody's trying to figure out how many carries is AP going to get. What does it mean for Mark Ingram? What are we going to do with this passing game? And no Brandon Cooks and Michael Thomas feels good. At the end of the day, the Saints' success or lack thereof is predicated on the fact that their defense has been awful. They gave up the most passing yards again last year, 5,000 yards. And I don't really know, as much as the Teron Armstead thing hurts, I think it hurts the running game more than it would probably ultimately hurt Drew Brees, who's known for kind of a quick release. So I don't know that it will have a major impact on the passing offense. Do you think, Matt?
I don't know. I'm so confused with the Saints and this Adrian Peterson thing. Yeah. This is what's really blowing my mind. I think you're right. I mean, Drew Brees knows how to get rid of the ball quick as well, and he's going to hit the open receiver. He's not a guy like an Eli Manning that'll just lock on Odell Beckham and that's it. So I think you're right there. I'm just so baffled about Mark Ingram. I think Mark Ingram's a really good talent.
I've said this many times. I feel like I'm the president of the Mark Ingram fan club, and Sean Payton isn't in that fan club.
And I don't understand. I see him keep going in the sixth round, and I wouldn't have a problem with it, but I think the Saints are really committed to Adrian Peterson. It really seems like that.
George, tying that into Matt's comment, the one saving grace is that the Saints did draft a tackle at the end of the first round with that pick that they got from the Patriots for Brandon Cooks. Now, you don't start a rookie at left tackle, especially when the guy wasn't thought to be a left tackle, but at least they have some depth there that they just acquired at that position. Similar to what Matt is saying, do you think they are really committed to giving Adrian Peterson the ball a lot this year?
I've been beating that drum the whole all season long. Adrian Peterson had one bad year, and then he was injury prone last year and all that. The offensive line was horrific, and all that garbage there. This guy's not done. That's it. Peterson gets 6 to 8 carries a game now for the rest of his career until he retires. I don't think he's there yet. I don't think he's anywhere near the all pro back he once was, but this is still a good back. Say it over and over again. For whatever reason, Sean Payton does not like Mark Ingram. That's not a joke. That's not making fun. He just doesn't. I don't know what it is. I don't know why. Everything I see looks like Ingram does the right things, but Payton doesn't like him, doesn't trust him, or he doesn't fit his system, whatever it might be. Peterson doesn't really fit Peyton's system either, because they really the Saints need a pass catching back. It doesn't make a lot of sense as you look at it as to why Peyton would have preferred Peterson over Ingram, but he seems to. So yes, I'm still beating that drum. I'd rather have Peterson than Ingram, especially when I can get Peterson later. But the left tackle going down concerns me a bit, where now I may just avoid it altogether.
He gave John Kuhn 3 1-yard touchdowns in a game last year. I was almost nearly lost my mind during that one. I have Ingram on every keeper league team that I have, and it's going to stay that way until the sand runs out of the hourglass for me. So, I don't know. I think it is going to be a difficult thing to decipher. I don't personally think that they're overly committed to Peterson. I still think Ingram is the feature back, with Peterson providing a huge compliment. What's ironic about this is that not only did they do that, but they drafted Alvin Kamara in the third round. So maybe this is their way of saying, sorry, Mark, we're done with you after this.
Yeah, and I remember hearing about a month ago or so, back in like early May, talking about making trades with him. I'm just baffled. And even if like they wanted to make Ingram the third down back, just to go crazy there. Like you said, they just drafted the kid from Tennessee to play that position. Mm-hmm. Not that he couldn't be waiting in the wings for that. I just think he's too talented. I do agree with George. I don't know if AP is done. It's been injuries. But I don't get the system. Of all the teams you could have went to, the Saints were like the one team I really wouldn't expect him to go to. It didn't seem like a good fit. But they seem to think differently. I mean, if you're just listening to everything coming out there, I don't know why you would bring him in if Sean Payton doesn't have a defined role for him to play.
And George, to your point, he doesn't seem to like Mark Ingram, or they're not entirely on the same page. We actually have seen them get into public spats on the sidelines. Now, that can happen. I think sometimes that stuff is overblown, but we have seen it happen. We have seen Ingram effectively get benched for Tim Hightower, of all people. And by the way, Brandon Cooks, who was a first-round pick, they couldn't get along so much, they traded him to the freaking Patriots, of all people. I know Michael Thomas may have a higher trajectory than Brandon Cooks, but what Brandon Cooks has produced every single time he's out there, George, except for the game where he took a zero and he complained about it.
I think that's probably why Cooks isn't there. That's, I think, more of a personality conflict, didn't like a locker room presence, all that sort of stuff. So I think that one I can figure out. The Ingram thing, I cannot. I don't know what it is with Ingram that he doesn't like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Because, listen, we all know Peterson is a Hall of Fame back, but he doesn't necessarily fit what the Saints do well. It's really more of an up-tempo passing attack, so he can catch the ball out of the backfield. Not something he excels at. They don't have a great offense. You mentioned if they would have been healthy, they'd be top 12, which is actually pretty good, but now they won't be. I guess that's not Peyton's fault. He didn't know this going in, but now he doesn't fit the system even more. So it's strange. I would love to know the reasons of why Peyton doesn't like or doesn't trust Ingram. Yeah, listen, it could just be a thing where, I don't know. I just, even Peyton's figuring, I just don't like him. He wants to move on here. But the Cooks thing, in my mind, it's just a personality locker room thing. He moved on from, had enough, was tired of the bitching and the whining. You know, you win a game by whatever it was, 21 points, and you're still complaining because you didn't catch any passes. I don't need that kind of garbage. You're out of here. So I think that's what happened there. Maybe Peyton, I mean, I would feel maybe stronger about this belief if he was a newer head coach, one or 2 years. But maybe once again, he's trying to redefine his team or put his stamp on this team where, hey, I'm the coach. It's my way or the highway. That sort of thing. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, look, I'm a little bit old school, and I wouldn't want guys complaining either. But are there any good wide receivers, really good wide receivers, which I consider Brandon Cooks to be one, Matt? Any ones that are active that would go through a game where they win by 21 points, he didn't even get thrown to and wouldn't complain? They would all complain.
Yeah, didn't somebody write a book, Throw Me the Damn Ball? He was like,
Keyshawn.
Yeah. I mean, come on. You have to expect it from a guy like that. I don't think that should be a reason you trade him. And if I was going to trade him, I think I wanted more than the 32nd pick overall.
Yeah.
That's the way I value him. Maybe I'm a little wrong, but I don't think so. Would it be interesting? What I think is going to be interesting this season in New Orleans is if Ted Ginn Jr. can catch the damn ball. I think he can reel in a lot of touchdowns. It'll be interesting to watch. But she's going to be playing on a carpet now, yeah, as opposed to grass, and it's Breeze versus Newton. So
I'm looking at has him in the starting lineup, but I could easily see Willie Snead having a better season.
Oh yeah, no, certainly Willie Snead will definitely. I like Willie Snead. To me, is definitely a top 30 wide receiver and maybe borderline top 25.
I think Ted Ginn is just going to be that home run hitter. I picked him on the right day on DFS and I love Ted Ginn, but for me to draft him, I can't rely on him.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I guess he's the, he's going to play that role. You've seen Brandon Cooks go down that field. Yeah. The problem with Ted Ginn is he can't catch the ball.
Yeah. Last thing on their offensive line, you're right. They have tried to build it the same way, but they drafted Andres Pete really high in the draft. This is now his third season. He's currently playing left guard, which is not what they had in mind. I wonder if they move him over or if they take Zach Strief, who's an 11-year veteran. They move him over to left tackle, start the rookie at right tackle. But when you start doing that, you start moving pieces around, then you're a mess. Like what happened to the Cardinals offensive line last year was a disaster because they started moving players all over the place, and then Carson Palmer is getting ravaged.
Yeah, to make just a baseball analogy, you look at the Mets infield, you start taking guys out of position and stuff like that. It's usually not going to work well. And I mean, I don't know. I was kind of optimistic with the Saints. There was a problem of theirs. They've made the moves from the trades that they made and draft picks, as you said. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Teron Armstead isn't the first guy that we think about when it comes to fantasy discussions, but he's going to keep Sean Payton up at night, George, that injury.
So you're breaking up on me there, Mr. Blewett.
Sorry. Teron Armstead isn't the first name we talk about when we talk about fantasy football, but it's the type of injury that's going to keep Sean Payton up at night.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it would for any team, right? I mean, injuries are always part of the game. That's why, we make all these predictions now, more about team predictions. Oh, this team has the hardest schedule going. This team has an easy schedule. This team's going to do great. We're in June, and we're talking about injuries. We've seen it every year. Come training camp, there'll be a couple more guys that go down that'll change our fantasy outlooks on teams. Football's a brutal sport, man, and losing your left tackle this early is a killer. But at the very least, you want to look at the optimistic side, you have all training camp to figure out a solution.
They do. We'll talk some more football when we come back. Mike, Matt, and George on the Road to Extras in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back on the Road to Extras in the Morning. Hope you're enjoying your Saturday morning, summer Saturday, Father's Day weekend. Hope all you dads out there are getting some good gifts. I got mine last night because my 4.5-year-old son can't keep a surprise, so it got delivered to the house, and he kept hinting that I got a gift, and he was asking my wife, "Can I give it to Daddy?" And she said, "No, you gotta wait till at least tomorrow." He couldn't even wait till the end of dinner, so he ran in the other room and he got it. He got some new shoes. So in any event, so all good there. Again, I hope you all enjoy your weekends. But the offensive line thing got me thinking about the other injury, which happened to Taylor Decker. He's out 4 to 5 months. He had surgery. They trade for Greg Robinson from the Rams, who is a failed number two overall pick. I think we can assess that. So he's a failure for the Rams. The Rams get what they can get for him, which was like a sixth round pick, right?
Yep, sixth round pick.
So, you know, Georgia says a lot about the Rams, but at least the Lions pulled an asset from another team to try and fix the running game. The problem is I didn't have a lot of faith in the running game in the first place. We talked, Corey Parson, the fantasy exec, and I talked to Dave Burkett, their fantasy beat writer, just probably like a month ago, and he was out on the running game. He's like, this is just the same old Lions. You can't bank on Abdullah. You can't bank on anybody except Riddick catching passes. You feel that? Do you feel that's the case, or did you have any faith in anybody beyond Riddick catching passes?
No, in a perfect world, I feel the same way. I want to stay away from it as well. I'll say it again. Everybody has value at a certain point in the draft, but they're all players. We all have players. I'm sure you have. I'm sure Matt has them. Players that we probably trust less than others, which means odds are those players are going to go a couple of rounds before we'd even consider it. You know, and that's what Detroit is for me. I don't see either guy being a big goal line guy, so that way I can rely on touchdowns. And maybe in PPR leagues I can move these guys up a tick. But in the end, I think this obviously really comes down to Stafford finding his wide receivers, finding Eric Ebron, moving the ball through the passing game, scoring touchdowns through the passing game. The running game sort of becomes an afterthought. I wouldn't have Riddick or Abdullah anything more than a very low-end RB2, and both are more like RB3s for me.
Yeah, I mean, Riddick is just like the new Darren Sproles to me. So I think you can bank on him in that role, Matt.
I love Theo Riddick. When he's healthy and he's in there, he just performs. Like I just loved having him on my team last year. I had a team with David Johnson and him as my backs. And obviously right. David Johnson, but push that aside. Theo Riddick, when he's on the field, gives you, in the PPR format, delivers week in and week out.
I totally agree with that.
I think people underestimate him is kind of the point I'm trying to make. And that's why I'm comparing him with, you know, a David Johnson. I'm just saying, like, he's awesome. He's the elite. But this is a guy that should get a little more credit than he does. And the Abdullah thing, I just never been a guy. I know we've seen the little flashes here and there. I'm worried about that foot still. I'm still in on Theo Riddick.
When Abdullah came out of Nebraska, I liked him. But now that I've seen how it's played out and that the Lions still haven't fixed this running game as a whole, then I'm out. You know, I think I'm going to let somebody else take the chances on Abdullah. George, you mentioned Ebron. And I saw a tweet. You said something to the impact, to the effect, rather, that plenty of good tight ends out there. I don't need to reach for player X or whatever it was. Do you think Ebron is one of those guys that you'd feel comfortable with, George?
Sure. If I'm waiting till double-digit rounds to grab a tight end, which I have a funny feeling in most leagues that's what I'll be doing, I have no problem with Ebron. He'll be right in around that 10 to 14 range for me. There's a bunch of guys there that I'll be swapping in and out as the season moves along in my rankings, and I'll take any of them. Quarterback and tight end, I'm waiting on. Almost certainly in most leagues. There could be times I've been talking with Matt and Corey all week. There could be a time in round five, round six, where I just hate my draft, or all the players that I really have any remote interest in, they're all gone. The draft has gone wrong for me, and I decide to grab that top quarterback. So I want to have at least one top position player. Grab that top quarterback in round five. Grab that top quarterback in a tight end in round six. It would be rare, but it could happen. I'll be waiting on tight end. I'm going to have the Eric Ebrons of the world on my team, Zach Ertz's, guys of that ilk. I'll wait to lower end and load up on wide receivers, load up on running backs.
Matt, in this recent NFFC draft that you were in, Eric Ebron was the last pick of the 12th round. I think that's what George is talking about. He'd be comfortable with that. But, you know, for me, in the 11th round, you got Jack Doyle, Hunter Henry, and Zach Ertz going in front of him. I think I'm in on all three of those guys before Eric Ebron. Ebron just hasn't gotten it done. I'm not a believer.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a popular pick this year.
I know,
like
but here, he does go pretty late.
I do get why. I mean, look, Anquan Boldin not being there and those 95 targets and 8 touchdowns, it's got to go to somebody else. If Ebron can stay healthy, I can see that being a a big benefactor to him. But I do, I'm a Jack Doyle guy. I wouldn't mind the Ebron, especially at his price, in the online championship I did, which is the 20 round that you have to, that we play the season out. You have to do roster moves as opposed to the one where you don't. Ebron went in the 11th round. I think as we get closer, he'll be more of a 10th round, end of the 9th round. There's too many people like him out there.
That's what I'm
that
yeah,
he's
what
going
I'm
to get to.
I'm actually surprised that he went this late here, but I hear him being talked about quite a bit because of the reasons I think you said with Ebron.
I love
not being there.
I mean, if I'm waiting and I can get Kyle Rudolph in like the 9th round, I love that. I mean, you got to look at the quarterback, the situation. I mean, it's Sam Bradford. He's got the connection with him. I think he's still going to be an end zone target. So, I mean, Rudolph to me is a guy, if you wait, I'm not paying a third round price for any tight ends. I did that with Gronk last year. I got burned.
In this draft, it was Reed, Kelsey, Gronk, in order, all in the third round.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I think, what you're really going to pretty much see. People are going to say, I want to get that advantage at that position. And, I mean, if Jordan Reed didn't have the concussion, I would definitely consider him there. But in my opinion, he's fantastic. But that one hit, and even if it
Kelsey's doesn't, now the safest tight end.
He is
at the top.
And I don't, has he ever scored more than like 5 touchdowns in a season?
They don't score more than 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, I know.
They can't freaking score.
You know, look, he's going to be more of a vocal point. He is their number one passing option. I mean, it's Kelsey, not Tyreek Hill. He's their number one wide receiver, but I'm a little concerned that he can be a number one wide receiver. I think he's not a gadget player. He's more than that. But when you look at the second half of the season and you see where he was in receptions and yards, and then he finishes 7th in points, something ain't right there, you know? So
yeah, it's a lot of home runs. George, Olsen goes here in the 5th round. That's usually the guy I wait for, especially in PPR formats. I feel like he's the safest guy. If I can get him in the 5th round, I would actually be willing to pay a price there for Olsen, but typically I'm going to be waiting as you did. Would you be comfortable with Greg Olsen in the 5th round, or are you still going to wait, George?
I'm going to wait. Like I said, I like Olsen. You know, I have no issue with him. I have him as my number 4 to a tight end, so I have no problems with him on my team. But once again, I'm not going to spend a high pick on a tight end. If I take the Olsen or Kelsey in round 4, 5, 6, whatever it might be, it means I probably don't like my draft. I probably don't like my team so far, and it could happen. There are just some drafts that go wrong. Every pick you have, you know, Matt Bodega's taking the guy right before me that I want, and I'm breaking pencils all the time because I keep losing my guys. It happens, and you start doing things that maybe you wouldn't normally do, and maybe there'll be a draft where I just want to be a little different, and I want to see what happens if I do take a quarterback early, if I do take a tight end early. But I know my philosophy is to wait. So also, we'll probably have to fall even further than that. You said round 5. Actually, if he were to fall to, let's say, round 6, round 7, then I think the value is there. Yes, well, I'll grab him. But other than that, I'll say it again. I have no problem taking Martellus Bennett in double-digit rounds, the Ebrons, Zach Ertz. I might just die with Julius Thomas this year and see if Miami is actually telling the truth.
Holy cow.
I'm probably kidding, but if I wait until really, really late.
That's a dice roll.
His best seasons have come with Adam Gase at the helm here back in Denver. But then again, that was with Peyton Manning, not Ryan Tannehill. But I might buy into the hype a little bit there. It certainly wouldn't be on more than one team, though.
If Martellus Bennett has a good season, I'm going to get burned because I'm definitely not going to draft him.
I'll have him in some spots. I don't want to be overexposed, but I want to have a share or two here or there of Marty B.
Why is he on so many teams?
Well, he's kind of like the mercenary man. You know, he's...
All right. So if he's great, he wouldn't be outspoken. A mercenary.
He's outspoken.
He's outspoken.
I think his act wears thin.
Yeah, and he was with the Bears. They moved on from him. The Patriots still have Gronk. You know, they went and got Allen. So, hey, look, he's in a good situation.
Yeah.
I mean...
Jared Cook was, too.
Yeah, Jared, but as Corey Lescorum. Bigfoot. I love that.
God, please.
I love that nickname.
I'm sorry to bring him up, George. I know he's part of a painful memory for you, but I don't think he's
any
good.
I met Corey bitching about him.
What do you think of, like, in the 7th round, Mr. Underrated, Mr. You get Delanie Walker or like a Jimmy Graham?
I still can't figure out the Jimmy Graham thing in Seattle, but I'm fine with Delanie Walker.
I think he's just. He is a guy that they do go after in the red zone. They do try to get him.
Yeah, So, like, I think Delanie Walker's role is more defined. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, Jimmy Graham, we've seen big ups and downs, George. And I don't know that I can consistently figure out, especially since Seattle's offensive line is still terrible. Like, does Russell Wilson get beat up again? And then the passing game suffers. Like, this passing game is always really at a week-to-week scenario.
Listen, I like both guys you just mentioned here. I'll take them on my team. So those are guys that I would assume would be on some of my teams. Because now you're looking at tight ends maybe in the round 8, round 9 area where I'll start to look. Delanie Walker, I'll take on all my teams. I think he's going to have a very nice season.
Me too.
Stay healthy. I think Mariota will look for him quite a bit here. So I have no problems with Walker. Jimmy Graham may be more of a little boomer bust thing. But once again, outside of Doug Baldwin, who else is Wilson throwing to? And I think maybe Graham finally getting comfortable there, maybe finally healthy as well. So I'll be big on Graham this season also, as long as he falls to where I want him to fall. I said, I'm not taking a tight end top 6 rounds. It's round 7 on that I'll start to think about tight end and start to see where the value is.
And then there's one of the most efficient players, Tyler Eifert. He's just that back injury I got to stay away.
Yeah. Well, I like me some Tyler Eifert, but let's be honest. Of all the players that can't stay healthy, he's the can't stay healthiest of them all. He's never on the field.
But Dalton loves him in the red zone.
Yeah, I'm not getting sucked in. Mike, Matt, and George back after this. Back, rocking out to the Foo. George, you know he's not going to be rocking out for the next few weeks is Jalen Ramsey of the Jaguars. He gets hurt. Sam, I probably won't miss any games. I don't like that kind of nebulous talk, you know. I want them to say something like he's going to be good to go for training camp, but they're losing a key young piece on their defense. So I say all of that to ask you. You were very in on the Jaguars last year. Didn't work out.
Ah, shut up.
Are you back in? Are you back in on the Jags? Do you think they got a shot this year to put it all together?
I think I may have been a year early. Okay, maybe a year.
All right,
early.
Happens to the best of us. I like the Cardinals to go to the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, but see, I kind of agreed with you there.
So I know you did. I know you did. So I need some help when I make a bad call. I need somebody to go down with the ship with me. So in any event,
that's right. Go down in flames. Look at that division. I mean, Houston, it all depends on the quarterback, right? The defense is there. Running game's there. We have good receivers. Can Deshaun Watson, Tom Savage, can somebody make that jump there to really for them? The Tennessee Titans, I think they're the best overall team, but they're not a powerhouse, right? We have Mariota. Can he stay healthy for a full season? 0-2 so far. Indianapolis, it's all about the defense there, and now it's Andrew Luck's shoulder, which scares you. So why not Jacksonville? The problem is I don't trust Blake Bortles. I mean, fantasy-wise, he's been fine, although I think that changes this year because I don't think they want him throwing the ball anywhere near what he's been throwing it. But I think they're doing the right thing here, go with a strong running game. You got Fournette there. The defense has been really – they've added so much talent to that defense that if it doesn't improve, it just makes you wonder what's going on there. They have plenty of talent there. So I think Ramsey, you know, and the Jacksonville will be better. You know, am I going to tell you they're going to win the division? No. I think I'll play it safe this year. But I do think they'll be in the running for a wild card. How about that? Running for a wild card.
There you go. He's the fantasy magician, Blake Bortles is, Matt. But he's probably going to throw like 100 times or more or less than he did in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing for him. And that's kind of why I'm so high on Big Leonard. I think Fournette is the focal point of that offense. And as George said, maybe George was a year early. There was a lot of people that liked him. So, you know. But I thought the defense last year, they acquired a lot of talent even in the draft last year, but it usually takes that 1 year to like gel together and stuff. Now they got Bowie. I think they should be really good. You know, you're still going to have to go up against an Andrew Luck a couple times a year, but I like this team. I like that they got Coughlin in there to maybe like steady the ship. And I don't think he's going to be there for that long. You know, he's kind of older now.
Yeah, if they don't play well, Doug Marrone's not going to be there for long either.
Yeah, so. I still like Marrone. You know, we had that little brief we talked earlier, that brief snapshot in Buffalo. But I did think he could be a good coach back then. So he's lucky enough to get the second chance. And I think he'll cap. You see that a lot with coaches, too. The second time around, they're a lot better. So I think everything's shaping up for them to be a better team. And even like Marquez Lee. I like him opposite of Allen Robinson. I think he's one of the more underrated receivers as well.
I like Lee a lot as a player. When they drafted all those guys, I thought he was going to be the premier guy. Obviously, it's become Robinson, but I think Lee's got some potential there. I just don't know. And Hearns' season last year was abysmal. Robinson obviously was abysmal based on where he was drafted, but by year's end, he accumulated enough stats that it was respectable. I think that's going to be the hardest thing I'm going to have to figure out with the Jaguars during this summer is what kind of season, George, can Allen Robinson have? You know, is he firmly in that wide receiver two conversation? Where in the wide receiver two conversation? Do you know what I mean?
I think the Jaguars are making a transition. I don't think they believe they can win. And this is really an indictment of Bortles. I don't think they believe they can win with Bortles throwing the ball 30 plus times a game. I think they believe they have to be a more balanced offensive attack and maybe even relying on the defense more and trying to win 21-17 games rather than trying to win 31-28 games. I think they think Bortles just makes too many mistakes. So I think that hurts the entire passing offense there. Yeah, I think we've seen Tom Coughlin is sort of that kind of, and he's not coaching the team, but he's overseeing everything, and he is that kind of coach, wants to win those kinds of games. So that concerns me all around here. Bortles isn't in my top 12 for quarterbacks this year, even though fantasy-wise he's done that the past couple of years. Allen Robinson has to drop. You know, Allen Hearns has to drop. They don't have a tight end anymore worth worrying about. Marquise Lee, maybe you like him as a sleeper later on, but as far as the passing offense is concerned, I'm not on board.
Yeah, I'm with George. I think Bortles makes his way out of the top 12 this year.
Yeah, I really wanted no part of Bortles. I passed on him in several drafts at opportunities where I could have had him at a very good price, but I do think Allen Robinson is a red zone threat still. You know, you got that big body. And I do think if Fournette is successful and this game plan of running the ball more and stuff, it's going to open up play action. It can benefit in other ways too. So I can't just write off Allen Robinson. He's too talented. I know he killed people last year. I mean, weeks 12 to 15, he didn't even get like 20 points.
The upside for Robinson is that there is no tight end, mm-hmm. like you're saying. So it's Michael Rivera is the starting tight end there right now. We saw little flashes from him in Oakland, but nothing consistent. And I think to your point, Matt, he will be the number one pass target in the red zone. What worries me about this whole team is that they make the investment with Fournette. Then they draft Cam Robinson in the second round. Mm-hmm. It's plain to see that this is a sea change of the offense. They can't have Bortles throwing as many times as he's going to throw because he turns it over way too much and he's inaccurate and all that kind of stuff. What worries me is could this be a Todd Gurley situation from last year? This offensive line isn't fixed. Yeah, they got Brandon Albert there who didn't even talk to the coach for a couple of months. And then they've moved on from guys like Luke Jokel. This is not the hogs from the old days. This isn't the current day Cowboys and Titans. This is the Jaguars who really are struggling to put an offensive line together. This unit's never played together. So is Fournette going to see 250 carries like Todd Gurley saw last year, and it's all for naught? Is he a little bit better player than Gurley? Yeah, but he's not leagues above where Todd Gurley's at.
Well, what I'm hoping is, from what I've heard, is they're really trying to get him more advanced in the passing game. They're really working on that. And I think if they can use him in the passing game, get him in some free spaces, this dude is hard to take down. You know, you get him out there, the good things can happen. And I think that's what they kind of need to do with Bortles, too. He can't be the deep game dried up last year. It just completely was it came to a crashing halt. So, you know, if they got a dump off, they have to use this asset as best as possible and as many different ways.
George, are you willing to take a shot on Fournette? Where we see him going, he's going early. So if you're going to get him, you're going to get him early. Second round is where we're seeing him go pretty consistently in this NFFC draft. Last pick of the second round is where Matt took him. And he took Terrell Pryor too. You take a lot of the guys that we talk about on this show. There's no, I mean, Matt puts his money where his mouth is when it comes to these teams. So George, to that point, are you willing to spend that price for Fournette? Or are you worried about a Gurley situation where they just, they can't get him out in space at all?
Because unlike with Gurley, I didn't think there was any other offensive talent around him. At least with Jacksonville, I don't think they want to focus on the passing game anymore. But the threat is there. The defense is still have to account for it.
That's a great point.
You can't just let Allen Robinson run wild back there in the secondary. He will get open. Even Bortles will hit him every now and then. Mm-hmm. So they have passing weapons here. I mean, Robinson's still a very good wide receiver on a bad passing team. You know, Allen Hurns, I still believe in. Marquise Lee, breakout year last season. So they have talent in the passing game. It's really more on Bortles. I think teams maybe may focus on the running game a little bit more, but I don't think there'll be a huge amount of 8 men in the boxes. You know, you're going to have somebody over the top on Allen Robinson. So, no, I don't think this is a girly situation.
Hot seat conversations can range from week to week, but do you think there would be a shot here where if Bortles comes out there, they're focusing on the running game, like you're saying, and Bortles got to put the ball up there and he starts throwing picks and we're 5 weeks in and they're 1-4 and Bortles got, you know, 8-9 picks, Matt, do you think they move him out?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get the opportunity to start, but after, say, week 4, if they're 1-3 and it's basically due to Blake Bortles, they're going to find another solution.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, that roster. So your solution would be Chad Henne. You're in on Chad Henne, George?
Oh, my God, no. Check down Chad.
Yeah.
That's another interesting thing, though.
Be good for Fournette.
Isn't every Chad, check down Chad? Pennington, Henne? Every guy named Chad that played QB, we could just call him check down? I mean, they're both
Chad
accurate.
Chad certainly aren't blessed with rockets for arms.
Yeah, yeah. So you were going to say?
No, I'm just surprised. I'm not saying they had to bring in, like, a true number one starter, but they didn't get a better backup or something for that team.
Yeah, I think they just kind of had to go all in here. I was surprised they made the pick of Fournette, but kudos to them. That's the way they're going to go. They have a supremely talented prospect at running back now, and they're trying to build up the offensive line. So that's not surprising that Tom Coughlin would want to do things that way. He was really the guy guiding that. David Caldwell's GM there, but Coughlin kind of overseeing it. And I think they agreed that this is the way we're going to do it. We got to protect the quarterback. See if we have something here. And by the way, if it doesn't work out and they go like 7-9 and they really didn't see what they wanted out of Bortles, they're going to move on. You know, they're not going to keep them around long term. And there's actually, to their credit, they're probably assessing what next year's quarterback market looks like. And there will be a bunch of guys drafted in the first round, some of whom were better than all of the players that were drafted in the first round this year.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Like you said, like the Jets are going to suck for Sam and stuff, and how dependent you are on that year's talent, that year's crop, and like the quarterback is the key position in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's no joke.
Yeah, if you don't have that, you're done. And I think the Jets are going to take a look at a lot of guys in a lot of bad games this year. So we'll talk about that as we roll out this show. As we head towards 10 o'clock, it's going to be Tony Cincotta and Cha-Cha Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. Then it's the Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina, Frank Stanfill, and Mike Florio. So we'll be back to close out the show after this, the Roto Experts of the Morning. Chili's on Saturday morning. Chili's is one of those bands. They're really good, and I probably own a bunch of albums, but I've never gone to see them.
I've seen them live a bunch, and yeah, they were, you know, back in that early mid-90s range. They were really good, man. I really enjoyed their
I heard they're still killing it. Like Anthony Kiedis and Flea are freaks.
Definitely just have a lot of adrenaline. Yeah.
George, what's your thoughts? I know you're a little bit more of an old-school rock guy, but what are your thoughts on the Chili Peppers?
Chili, I mean, it would be one of my favorites. I do like a couple of songs, including the one that Chris Pavone is playing right now. But I wouldn't have him in my top 20, top 30. I'm more of a classic rock guy. I got to go back to The Who, Queen, Genesis,
George Stones to put any band that I mentioned in his top 20. I can't do it. I try every time.
ZZ
I'm like,
top.
I think maybe. Yeah, like I outside of the old school rock, I try to name a band. Yeah, see, it's still going. Yeah, it's still going, guys that are, some of whom are long since passed, and some of the rest are in their 70s, these rock stars. Yeah, go on.
And if I could take
Don't worry, Chris. I liked all the songs you played today.
And if I could take a quick second.
Better than what Pete Cacciatore does.
George, give him a second. Go ahead, man.
I would just like to thank Mike.
No.
I'd like to thank Mike and George over these past few months letting me come in here with them on every Saturday morning, as the schedule will be changing in July. I'll be doing a show on Sunday. And it's just been really great. I'll probably be back there if one of these guys needs a day off, help fill in and stuff. But they've really helped me in this process early on in my career doing this. And I'm very grateful for that. And I've had a blast doing it with them.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. You're a tremendous asset, and we appreciate it. Matt's going to be out next week, and then the schedule changes over. It's conceivable he'll be back for another show at some point in the short term. But long term, schedules are changing up. I'll be doing Saturday and Sunday mornings. Consistently, so you'll be hearing me every morning, every Saturday morning, from either 8 to 10 on Saturdays or 7 to 10 on Sundays when the season rolls around. But George and I will keep doing it for the next few months, so thanks, man. Appreciate that, and appreciate you. So
thank you, guys.
So we're coming up, we do have Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Tony Sincana from 8 to 10, then from 10 to 12, then from 12 to 2 it's the Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina, Frank Stanfill, and Mike Florio, and then I believe it's the Fantasy NASCAR Hour with Sean and Scott Engel. So with that being said, George, one of these days I'm going to name a band that you're not expecting, and you're like, hey, I really like those guys. They're in my top 20, although you rattled off about 30 bands that were all defunct by 85. So I'll have to work harder. So
wow,
the last topic. Harsh. Yeah, the last topic we'll do for 1 minute. Doug Martin apparently looks like the Doug Martin of 2015, according to Mike Garafolo of the NFL Network. Do you believe that?
I do not believe it. Draft Jaquez Rodgers. He'll be the starting running back on opening day.
George, do you believe the hype on Doug Martin?
Oh, I so agree with Matt. And as for Matt wanting to thank me for everything, let's see how much Matt wants to thank me when we're working together on Sundays for 4 hours every week.
Yeah, you guys are going to get after one another at some point. 4 hours is a long time. 2 hours sometimes is a lot. But so Doug Martin does miss the first 3 weeks of the season. Rodgers will be there to start. George, I know you've taken advantage of Rodgers in some mock drafts and that kind of stuff, because you thought, it's like, hey, we got to stream running backs anyway. Why don't I just use them for the first 3 weeks and figure it out after that?
My biggest worry is this. What if Rodgers is playing well the first month of the season? Are they automatically going to go back to Doug Martin? And why would you do that? I wouldn't. You know, so that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking they might end up sticking with Jaquez Rodgers. I don't trust Martin whatsoever.
Yeah. We talked about a lot of teams that have offensive line issues. The Bucs are another one. They're in the 20s in the rankings. It's not good. So are the Jags. So are the Lions now. The Saints, it was looking pretty good there for a minute, but that injury is going to hurt them a lot, so we'll see what they can piece together. So thanks for joining us today. We do appreciate you joining us. Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning. I will be back here with George tomorrow on Father's Day from 8 to 10. Thank you to Chris Pavona for producing a brilliant show with all kinds of fantastic rock music, which isn't in George's top 20, but it's still great. Thanks. Have a good day, everybody.